In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Friday, September 19th, 2014, and we are talking ISIS, war, Obama, and more today with Scott Horton, host of Anti-War Radio on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and KUCR 88.3 FM in Riverside, California. You can also catch Scott on The Scott Horton Show, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM. Check out Scott also at his website, scotthorton.org. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Tom, thanks very much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Well, I should have had you back a heck of a lot sooner. You know, see what goes and happens when I don't have Scott Horton often enough? We're at war again, for heaven's sake. So I've got to have you on more often to help us understand what's going on in the world, because I don't know anybody who keeps up with it as consistently as you do. So now we're being told that it's essential for the U.S. to go back into the Middle East again, get involved in another Middle Eastern war. This time, we really have to do it. Even some of the non-interventionists among the conservatives are saying, well, yeah, we're non-interventionists most of the time, but this, I mean, two journalists were beheaded. Surely we have to intervene now. What is your take on that? I mean, why are the conservatives just squishy on this? Are the ISIS people really that much worse than any of the other bad guys from the past? What's going on here?
Well, the ISIS guys really are fanatical. I mean, if you need a poster child for a group of terrorists, you know, taking over a state and being just as bad as you could possibly imagine them being, and they fit the bill. They really are civilian butchering monsters, and they're very chauvinist. You know, they absolutely hate Shia. They're very fanatical. They're basically, in a sense, minus the WMD, of course, they are sort of the terrorist threat that George W. Bush pretended that Saddam Hussein was when he set about to make it this way, which is exactly what was the result of his lies back then.
All right, well, let me jump in on this. Then in that case, then why are the conservatives not right to say most of the time we don't favor intervention because it just leads to worse outcomes? But how could there be a worse outcome than this organization gaining more and more ground? There couldn't be. So therefore, we have to have the intervention. How do you answer that?
Well, because right now they're actually very weak. And they could become much more powerful, and they're more likely to become much more powerful if we intervene, rather than being degraded. And, you know, the thing of it is, and this is, you know, as you set it up, what's the problem with the right? The problem with the right is they see images on TV of convoys of Toyota trucks. Where do they get those Toyota trucks? Coming down the road with all these ISIS guys in them, and they think, wouldn't it be fun to fly an F-15 and blast these guys? Sure, no problem, and no innocents killed there, no big deal. However, that doesn't accomplish anything, actually, other than all of their public relations goals. Just today, I interviewed the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, Michael Scheuer, on my radio show, Tom. And he was saying to me that those beheadings are nothing but the worm on the hook, and we're the fish. And they don't just want, they desperately need American intervention against them. Tom, war is the health of the state unless you completely are obliterated and lose. And so for the same reason that George W. Bush and Barack Obama need terrorist enemies, these terrorists need American enemies. And if they can be seen as the ones fighting the Americans, they rally that many more people to their cause. And it's also no different if Obama is just flying air missions or sending in ground troops, because if he's just flying air missions, then he's really just flying air cover for the Shiite Iraqi army and militias backed by the Iranians, which the Iranians, of course, it's not just that they're Shiites, it's that their government is a revolutionary Iranian, a revolutionary Shiite theocracy. So it's, you know, Shiism in force. And so if those groups come in and try to take these cities that ISIS has conquered back, that just rallies even more people to their cause. So if we back any of ISIS's enemies against them, we make them more powerful. Same thing, even if we send our Marine Corps, at the very most damage we could deliver to them would be we send our Marines, they sack Mosul, they sack Fallujah, they sack Tikrit. No one doubts our Marines could do it, although I don't really know if we have enough of them now, but maybe. But anyway, then what are they going to do? As Michael Schroeder put it on the show today, stay there forever, hold that territory forever? The truth of the situation is, the new Islamic State, so-called caliphate over there, is absolutely and completely landlocked and surrounded by enemies. And really, the people that they've conquered, the Sunni Arabs of Western Iraq and Eastern Syria that they actually are ruling over, have more reason to hate them and want to be rid of them than anyone else. And actually, you know, they are pretty much a movement that has forced themselves on these people in a lawless territory. But the traditional system in these regions is the tribal system, not, you know, hardcore Islamist, Salafist, you know, bin Ladenite caliphateism or whatever. And so, you know, in other words, they're absolutely contained just by geography, by the enemies that they have in every direction. And because they're such would-be totalitarian monsters, they absolutely alienate the people that they attempt to rule. And we saw what happened when Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is what this is, really, Al-Qaeda in Iraq during Iraq War II, they ended up alienating all the local Sunnis that they'd been fighting for because they just took it way too far. And then after Zarqawi was killed, they tried to declare themselves for the first time the Islamic State of Iraq, at which point all the local Sunni tribal and religious leaders said, yeah, right, this is our country. Most of these Al-Qaeda guys are foreigners, Saudis, Libyans, Syrians, Egyptians, and Jordanians, and others who had gone there to fight. And they said, no, this is our country. You guys are our, you know, small minority of helpers. You are not the bosses of us, and quickly marginalized them in the so-called great victory that David Petraeus took all the credit for when the tribes marginalized the jihadists back then. So, in other words, even from a non-libertarian point of view, even from just a hardcore American national interest utilitarian point of view, the best solution here is to do nothing and to let you know, the situation play out. Because, you know, I read a scaremongering thing, Tom, by a guy from the Rand Corporation who said, it's funny, as shades of Mike Myers saying, you know, they're making $2 million a day, right? Like, these guys have never heard of Alan Greenspan and inflation before. They still think that's a lot of money. And he estimated that their annual budget this year will be $2 billion. $2 billion. Not $200 billion. Not $2 trillion, which is a third of the USA's budget. Just $2 billion. Not $20 billion. $2 billion is their annual budget, and that goes to pay their fighters and their fighters' wives when they get killed, their pensions, whatever. They have more than their hands full and enemies all around. And so really, Tom, I would argue, what conservative, liberal, or anyone else could argue, that now is the single best time ever to just stop intervening over there. It's 100% clear that this is 99.9% America's government's fault. And there's nothing we could possibly do in intervening in the situation but make it worse. So if there was ever a time to just go cold turkey on intervention and quit trying to pretend that the next one is going to solve the problem of the last one instead of making it worse, now's the time.
Scott, there have been a number of different estimates of the strength of the forces of ISIS, the types of numbers that we're talking about. There's been a CIA estimate, which may be an overestimate. You never know what to think about CIA estimates. What's your sense of how substantial a force we're looking at?
Well, I mean, I think, as you mentioned, the CIA high-end estimate is 30,000 fighters. How many of those are committed, kind of, you know, real hardcore, you know, ideological types? Maybe half of that. probably less. And, you know, the real question is, in what swamp are they festering? You know, why is the why have the tribal leaders compromised with these men at all? Why have the former Ba'athist military commanders of Saddam Hussein compromised to work with these, you know, school shooter, you know, Khmer Rouge lunatic types? And the answer is because they've been completely frozen out. Because not just did George Bush invade Iraq, but he stayed. And remember, even libertarians, all kinds of people say, well, we can't just cut and run now. The violence will get worse. We can't leave now. We can't leave now. They said it for years and years. But it was America that was causing all the violence. Because, and this is especially easy to see now, Tom, that America's left and is now going back again and all this. You look back in hindsight, the only mission the Americans actually accomplished the entire time that they were in Iraq was to help the Iranian-backed Shiite militias kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad and make it an 85% supermajority Shiite city ruled by the 60% majority Shiite Arab population of the country. It was a minority-ruled Sunni Ba'athist dictatorship, not a Sunni Islamist one, a Ba'athist one, meaning Saddam was basically a communist in olive green with a beret and a clean-shaven chin, but he was representing the Sunni minority tribes and all of that and lording it over the Shia. And what Bush did was he had the Army and the Marine Corps change that and make Baghdad a Shiite city. So what did that mean? It meant that the parties that Bush chose to put in power to be the leaders of the Shiite community to take over the new government in Baghdad, by the time America left, they didn't have one reason left to compromise with the Sunnis at all. We'd given them all of Baghdad. So from their point of view, the Sunnis can rot in the sun. If they want, you know, they want to fly a black flag over Mosul to Crete and Fallujah, Baghdad doesn't really care about that. The Iranian plan and well-intentioned and well-informed commentators have been warning this all along. I'll cite Bob Dreyfus, Justin Raimondo, and others from 2003 on, saying the Iranian plan is to run away with Baghdad, the land from Baghdad to Basra, Shiistan, George W. Bushistan, Ayatollah land, in alliance with Iran. And they don't care about, they're not dumb enough to want to try to occupy and conquer and rule the predominantly Sunni areas of Iraq. That's why the Iraqi army, quote unquote, the Shiite army, turned and fled when ISIS came. They didn't want to fight at all because it wasn't their city to fight for. I'm talking about in Mosul in June. That's why they turned and fled. It was, you know, they were occupying somebody else's land and without the support to do so. So they just turned right around and went home. But so the Sunnis have been completely frozen out of the process since 2003. They get none of the spoils of the oil wealth, and they have none of the you know, security force positions in the police or the military, and so they're all basically you know, living in no man's land. And then here comes ISIS saying, we'll help you fight those Shiites, we'll get revenge for you, and we'll also fill the potholes and administer a local court system, and we'll be less corrupt than the people that you've been suffering under now. And so even though these guys are a bunch of bin Ladenites, this is the same effect happened with the Taliban in the 1990s. The warlords fighting over Kabul were such criminals that people welcomed the Taliban because they're not corrupt. And when they find someone corrupt, I mean, they're evil and totalitarian, but they're not corrupt. You can't bribe them. And if one of them takes a bribe, he gets thrown on the will, you know, kind of thing. And that's the kind of compromise that people are making now. They've lived in such insecurity, in such desperation, frozen out of the system of the country formerly known as Iraq, that they are now desperate enough to turn to these guys. So again, back to the point that it was American intervention that made it this way. And I'll go you further, Tom, because I'm not certain if you're going to ask me or not. I'll go ahead and say the Obama strategy, as he's explained it, is absolutely laughable and crazy and ridiculous and cannot work. He swears there's going to be no combat troops. And he may even be telling the truth for now that that's what he wants. But then he says he's going to destroy ISIS with what? Drones and F-18s? Bombing from the air? Killing even more civilians in aerial strikes? Rallying even more people to their cause? You can't sack a city and drive a government out of control of a city with just air power, not unless you're willing to go full-scale Dresden on them. And you can't do that with, you know, photography being what it is in the 21st century now. And so... what he's announced, and this is just the Iraq side, in Syria, he still wants to keep backing some of the Mujahideen against the other Mujahideen and against the Shiite government there. He's absolutely, you know, 10 times as mad in Syria as he is in Iraq. And yet anyone can tell you, anyone who's not just hell-bent, you know, up to their eyeballs in slogans, Tom, can tell you, this strategy as outlined by the government, by Obama, by his Secretary of Defense, makes no sense whatsoever. It's an absolute disaster. And that's why they say it might take as long as 3 years. It's because they have no idea how this is even supposed to work. In fact, I'll even go you one worse, which is the Kagans, the very famous neocon family, Robert Kagan and Fred Kagan. Well, Fred Kagan has a wife named Kimberly Kagan, and they were the two big think tank supporters of the surge back in 07, which accomplished nothing other than making everything worse. But they have a new study out that says Obama's got to put in at least 25,000 ground troops. It's at the Institute for the Study of War. And they say right there in the preface, it's hilarious the way they say it. I'll paraphrase it very closely. It's, there is no articulatable narrative for how to achieve a positive outcome in Iraq and Syria. Send 25,000 troops. We cannot even feed you a line of BS that we think even sounds plausible, like it could work. So we're not even going to try. We're just going to tell you we gotta bomb them and we gotta send troops. That's all they can say, Tom. They don't even have a line about how it's supposed to work.
All right. Okay. So they don't have a line on how it's supposed to work, but presumably they have some unstated real reason for what they do, because they always have some real reason, and then they give us the BS reason. If they're not giving us a BS reason, I assume they still have some reason. And now, for Obama personally, it could be nothing more than he feels compelled to do something and he's sick of being called a wimp. I'm sure there's something more to it with him, but the people around him must have some reason for this. What is that reason?
Well, you know, it's confusing because in terms of domestic politics, most of the foreign policy pressure is, as you can hear John McCain stuck in the doublethink, is still focused on Assad, as though Assad is a worse threat than ISIS. And that's simply because that's what Israel wants. As Michael Oren, the former ambassador to the United States from Israel, explained, Israel has wanted Assad gone this whole time. And between these bad guys, Al-Qaeda, and those bad guys, Assad and Hezbollah, he prefers these bad guys, Al-Qaeda. Because those bad guys, Assad and Hezbollah, are backed by Iran. And so that's the domestic political pressure, mostly, is still to weaken Assad or even complete the overthrow of Assad in order to destroy Iran's last alliance in the Arab world. In order to weaken Iran, because that's Israel's obsession. And then, but never mind the fact that Iran is not really America's enemy. The only thing Iran ever did to America was overthrow our sock puppet fascist dictator monster that ruled their country, which they had every right to do. It's Al-Qaeda that's our enemy. And so it's, what's insane is that America's been really backing the rebellion, which has included Al-Qaeda, for the last 3 years in Syria due to this policy. Now the ship of state is so hard to turn around, they can't figure out how to just go back to allying with Assad like George W. Bush did and fighting against Al-Qaeda. Now they got to fight Al-Qaeda and Assad at the same time. The whole thing is just chaos. So, but when it comes to the answer of, but why attack the Islamic State? The only real, political, interest weighing on that I can think of really is just the bad public relations from a narrow party politics point of view, of just having basically Osama reincarnate, declare himself as the caliph of this state. It's just, it's bin Laden's dream come true. And just from how it looks in a domestic politics sense, even though there is the whole confusion and dissonance with the anti-Assad Syria policy, I think ultimately just they figure from Democratic and Republican politics point of view, they just can't tolerate somebody like Baghdadi being the government of Sunnistan in that part of Iraq. If somebody has to be the big daddy, Tony Soprano, tribal chief, that's one thing. But now their Syria policy has blown up in all of our face so big and in such an ugly way, and where he's literally calling himself the caliph, I think that just given the presumptions of the entire terror war, they just can't let that result stand. They're just, and I've been saying this since before they sacked Mosul, I've been saying this really all year long, is that ISIS and Nusra in Syria are getting so powerful now that I expect them to really create that caliphate between Syria and Iraq, and then for America to reinvade and go back to war against it. Just playing out, you know, the logical thing. In fact, a year ago, I wrote a thing in the Future Freedom Foundation saying that, that it's the rise of the caliphate and we'll end up going back to war against them, because it's just that easy to see, you know? In fact, Tom, it seems like really that Israel first support the Mujahideen treason, because, you know, to weaken Assad has actually helped prevent this war from being that much worse. If it wasn't, if we had just had a George W. Bush Assad policy this whole time of paying him to help kill and torture and murder these guys, then there wouldn't have been much confusion. Obama would have just declared war and we'd have gone right back to war in June. Instead, they've had to figure out, how in the hell are we going to sell going to war against Assad and his enemies at the same time? And it's making it very difficult. Thank goodness. In an ironical kind of way.
You know, as soon as this whole issue really broke, almost immediately we started to hear stories that had no substance to them. They were pure speculation, but about ISIS sleeper cells in the U.S. There was no evidence of this. It was entirely a suspicion of some ex-CIA guy. And every right-wing radio guy ran with this sort of story. Now, there's no evidence for anything like that. Now, it's not impossible, right? It's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility, but we go from 99% of Americans never even having heard of these people to the next day they're terrified that the guy running the deli down the street may actually belong to them.
Right. Yeah, no, it's crazy. And honestly, Tom, I mean, I think you're right to say that it is possible, and I think it's more likely now than ever before. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say. I've been saying for 3 years in a row that it is high treason for Obama to support the rebellion in Syria, for Obama to work and the CIA, the Americans to work with the Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks in order to train up and finance and support this jihadi-led rebellion, which has always been led by the suicide bomber kooks since 2011 on, this whole time. And yet the policy has persisted and persisted, and there are now at least a couple of thousand Western Europeans who have traveled to Syria to fight, some of whom have passports and will be able to make it back to Western Europe, and there are at least tens, they say, of Americans who've gone and done the same. There was an American suicide bomber in Syria who had gone to fight, and then he came home, and then he went back, and he did a suicide attack in Syria. But he was from Florida, and he came back and he hung around for a while before he went back and did his suicide attack. So, and in other words, do you have faith that the FBI and the CIA are keeping a close count on who all these guys are and where they are and making sure that none of them get back into the United States? I have absolutely no trust in that whatsoever. And so, yes, it has been an absolutely extremely dangerous policy this whole time to support this rebellion, which, again, I'm not saying has been direct U.S. support for ISIS, but in effect and indirect enough that it's still, you know, their responsibility. I mean, Assad would have won this civil war against these jihadists back in 2011, Tom, if it hadn't have been for the United States and our allies' intervention here, our satellites' intervention here. And so, but now, is it likely that we're going to see, you know, 20 guys hijack 4 planes and hit 3 out of 4 targets like on 9/11 kind of a thing? No. But then again, like you said at the top of this show, all it took was a video of a couple of journalists being beheaded over there. Guys who were, you know, taking a risk in a foreign war zone, that apparently is a good enough excuse to go to war. And I don't know if you've been watching Fox News lately, but there's a story that for some reason only they will cover, where a guy murdered, I think he's in the Northwest somewhere, he murdered 3 people at random, just murdered 3 people on the street at random, shot them. And then when he was arrested, he told the cops he did it as revenge for our foreign policy. And that, you know, in by definition, a lone wolf-inspired type attack. And this is what happens when we're now at year 13 of this and counting and reinvading again, and more than 1 million people killed, the entire region bankrupted, turned upside down, destabilized, radicalized. And so, yes, you're correct. There's no evidence whatsoever there are ISIS sleeper cells in the country. And that sure as hell shouldn't be a reason to go to war. That should be a reason to stay out of it anyway. But then also, you're right that it is a possibility and, you know, probably a greater one than ever before. Again, that's why we should not be intervening here. If anybody, I mean, let's just assume the premise for a minute that we do have a sleeper cell in every major American city. So now what are we supposed to do? Carpet bomb the caliphate over there? And that's going to what? Make these guys give up and go home? Or that's going to provoke them into actually killing people, you know, being activated and doing something crazy. And I'm not saying that we should negotiate with terrorists and we should do things their way, follow their marching orders or whatever, like they tried to say about Ron Paul. I'm just saying we're not supposed to be doing the wrong thing in the first place. So it's not the wrong thing to stop doing the wrong thing. And if stopping doing the wrong thing helps, you know, improve your security situation, well, then good. Doing the wrong thing never helped improve it, that's for sure.
Well, Scott, I'm going to let you run because this is plenty for my listeners to chew on. I always get told that when Horton is on the show, I listen two or three times. I got to absorb what is in that man's brain. So, and you have delivered again.
Every time I do your show, I get new listeners, new sponsors, new donors, new supporters, new greatest fans. So I owe you 10,000 thank yous.
Oh, well, look, I want to direct people over to you. I want people listening to you. I want people supporting you. I want you guys to know I support the Scott Horton Show with a monthly donation, and you guys should too. ScottHorton.org is your website. Is there anywhere else we want to direct people so they can hear more from you?
I'm at LRN.FM. From noon to three, but I also got to say, antiwar.com, read Jason Ditz, read Justin Raimondo, read our pick of the viewpoints for you, and those, especially those top couple of dozen news stories every day, and you'll be up to speed in no time flat.
Well, thanks again, Scott. We'll have you on again soon. We've got to. I mean, disaster struck. We didn't have you on quite often enough. We'll get you on again soon. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it again, Tom.
All right, everybody, a couple quick announcements. My new book's official release date now is October 14th. That is Cast in Stone, Real Dissent, A Libertarian Sets Fire to the Index Card of Allowable Opinion, will be out October 14th. I pushed it back a couple weeks to allow for the production of the audiobook, which takes a little bit longer than the print edition. They have to go through and do a quality check and all that. And I wanted all the formats to come out at the same time, the Kindle version, the print edition, and the audiobook. So October 14th is the date. I'll be sharing links to Amazon when they're all up. The Kindle version is up with a pre-order page. And, of course, if you're supporting my show, you will get the Kindle edition automatically. You can do that at supportinglisteners.com. But just remember, you're not going to get it until October 14th because I can't release it until then. I'm going to be in New York City October 11th at Liberty Fest 5. Check that out at lfnyc.com. If you're inclined to be a sponsor, write to them. Head over to lfnyc.com and help them out, but also attend. And, of course, take 50% off tickets with coupon code WOODS. We will be talking to Bob Murphy on this show. On September 30th, it turns out our schedules are just completely off. He's away, and then I'm going to be away. So September 30th is when we're going to take your questions. So tweet your questions. What questions do you have about economics? Tweet them to me, at Thomas E. Woods, and use hashtag AskMurphy, and I'll do my best to get those questions answered for you. Bob recorded a special mini course with me on the Great Depression and the New Deal and the Austrian view of these things that's available to all you supporters, silver and above, over at supportinglisteners.com, so check that out. All right, everybody, thanks so much for your support. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word. Next week, we celebrate the one-year anniversary of the show. That'll be a lot of fun. Thank you, guys. See you next week.
The Tom Woods Show.